on this week's show discussing getting out of your own way to unlock growth with John Laker and Asaf Ari from Lenker.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, I'm back and I'm solo today. That's right, I'm in charge. I can do what I want to do. And I met these two gentlemen and wanted to bring them on the show. And I thought, well, four voices is too many. So three is what we're going to do. So I'm outnumbered today and I'm just looking forward to it. John, welcome to the show, man. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
Where are you coming at us from today?
I am in the beautiful Twin Cities metro area, looking out at a blue sky and just loving this weather. A little bit dry, but Minneapolis is a beautiful city with lots of lakes, lots of arts, lots of culture, great food. And I'm loving being here.
It's a best time of year, right? It's the best time of year to be there, isn't it?
Yeah, we just kicked off a lake season after Memorial Day. Everybody's going out there on those boats and having a good time. I'm not quite in shape yet to be out there in a swimming suit, but I'm working on it.
Hey, we'll give ourselves some time. It looks, sounds like too, you guys aren't getting the smoke from the wildfires. It hasn't made it to you guys yet.
Not me. Not me. People keep talking about it, but I haven't seen it.
And you might have heard another voice in there. That's right. Asaf, how are you, man? Where are you coming to us from?
I'm right in downtown Minneapolis, looking at the US Bank Stadium right there, the Viking Stadium. And yeah, I'm on the 17th floor in my little loft here, and excited to be on the show today.
Well, I am excited to have both of you. We're going to dive in. Some of you might be wondering what we're doing, but that's all right. That's part of my job. Before we jump into the interview, though, we're going to pause for the cause.
It's important everyone supports a culture of well-being in the field and is equipped with the tools to help prevent suicide in construction. Procore Safety Qualified courses were built in partnership with our customers, elevating enhancements to their standard OSHA training. And the Bringing the Right Mindset series equips individuals and leaders alike with the skills necessary to really build resilient teams. We've made these three courses available for free and on demand, and they're offered both in English as well as Spanish, and they are CEU certifiable. Procore.com/certified-qualified is where we host our Procore's learning portal, and anyone can use their Procore credentials or create a free account to get started.
All right. Remember, we're back on YouTube. Check out youtube.com/@theConTech Crew. And some of you may have noticed that you got an email in your inbox. That's right. We've fired that thing back up. So stay tuned. You never know what we're going to put in there. At least now you can find out what's going on in the Geek of the Week. You can also find a link to the ConTech Crew. Subscribe so you never miss out. Subscribe at the ConTech Crew on YouTube as well. We want to see you. We want to grow it. The shorts are killing it too. At the ConTech Crew, we focus on technology that solves industry problems, and we've always believed in our sponsors, so much so that I went to work for one of them. So today, I want to talk to you about Join. Every construction project is a unique prototype, and it's actually shaped by thousands of decisions that impact the owner's business case, design, and the budget. Today, the communication driving these decisions is disjointed across all the stakeholders. Work happens in email, Excel, estimating, resulting in delays, waiting for decisions, waiting for access to information, and sometimes that information is outdated and incomplete. Managing the expectations of the team and keeping the project moving forward is a constant challenge, and a lot of times drives skepticism amongst the contributors. Join empowers general contractors to build with confidence and maximize the potential of every project by connecting these owners through new workflows that fit into your existing processes. We bring design teams and trade partners into a single platform. There's transparency and collaboration in the decision making, which builds trusts and sets projects up for success. You might be asking yourself, do you need another tool? Well, let me tell you, Join fits in seamlessly with your processes and your other tools. In fact, we're here to help those other tools. Regardless of your estimating system or your project management process, Join will be a valuable added resource without disrupting those other systems and your teams. Check out Join, the collaborative project delivery platform for the built environment. Learn more at join.build. All right, we are back, and I have two folks with me today, John Lenker and Asaf Ari, and they are the founders together of a growth consulting and marketing services firm located in the Twin Cities. And it's kind of neat. They got a variety of a client base, but we connected because they have a bunch of construction clients as well. So before we dive into what does that all mean, because guys, when I sat down with them, there was some really interesting stuff that I've always been talking about, but let's just be honest, I don't have the chops necessarily to put the words to it. So these two gentlemen do. But before we do, you got a little history of how this came together. John, tell a little bit about how you and Asaf connected and kind of how you got to where you are today.
Well, Asaf and I met in a business meeting around coming in, the potential of Lenker coming in to help with kind of resetting a struggling concrete contractor. They had a pretty large business that was completely commercial in nature. And, they had, won't go into any details, but there were some things that kind of derailed that as a business. And they were looking at how can we go forward in a new way with a new name, a new brand, with more of a focus on residential. And Asaf and his family had a reputation for being very successful in the trades and helping businesses grow pretty massively. And so they were brought in to kind of reset this company. And I met Asaf because he and his family were interviewing marketing partners. And so the first time I met Asaf, I was sitting across from a conference room, and he was interviewing me for to be his marketing partner. So that was how that started.
Well, Asaf, so this guy sits down across from you. What's some of your first impressions? Where's your head at? You know, kind of, what was this? Do we need this whole thing? I mean, where did that go?
So interestingly enough, I just came in from Israel at the time, and straight out of school, straight out of college, right? Business major in business and accounting, practiced accounting for a few years, and at the time, I saw this character in front of me, and I'm not sure if we need to spend all this money when we're trying to, fix a failing business. That was my first thought at the time. Yeah, it was a couple months, I think, John, going back and forth, and we had multiple interviews because we were interviewing a few other vendors as well. And we got referred to him by someone we know. Yeah, it was interesting. And I was just, in my diaper stage in the business world. So I'm sure that John can come and make fun of me a little bit of how I behaved that time.
Although I wouldn't, I don't know. You always kind of seem to be, the person who had the authority and the person who people listen to about the money side of things. But just the way you described it, I mean, that perfectly defines the relationship. On the one hand, it's like, wow, we need all this great stuff. On the other hand is, do people really need to spend money on this? This is kind of crazy. And it's kind of the thing that I think sparked the title for this episode is, what are the things that get into the mind of a person who is growing their business? Maybe they started out as an employee somewhere and thought, I can go out on my own. I can build something up. I can do well. And they do. They go, they get their first business, whether it's commercial or residential or whatever, and they get some success, they hire some people, and they grow, they get kind of, they bust past $1 million, maybe they're pushing $1.5 million, two, and then all of a sudden, all the pressures come in, the things that require them to do all the things they're good at, they get spread thin, and they start to get limited. And what is it that keeps people from successfully bridging into that next level of success, putting into that next gear? a lot of times it's just the kind of mental framework that they've had their whole life, that the work, you know, growing up and going to school or whatever, and getting their business going initially, it's worked so far, but they don't necessarily buy into the idea that I'm going to have to evolve too. I'm going to have to level up how I see the world. And really, to become a successful company, there's so many areas. There's finance. You know, what are your banking relationships like? You know, what's your branding? What does brand even mean? Do I even need a brand? I do good work. Everybody knows it. Blah, blah, blah. You know, how should I spend money to grow? What equipment and tools should I be investing in? Should I really buy the new F-150? Is that the biggest priority? Or should I take that same money and put it into Google ads, you know? So these are the kinds of things that are facing everyone. And Asaf and my relationship, as we got to know each other and kind of, you know, banging heads about priorities, you know, learn to really develop some trust. And that, you know, if you can get into certain strategic partnerships with companies, that, you know, you really do have one another's best interests at heart. So that's how we started. And, you know, we'll let you ask more questions about how we got to here, but, you know, that's the solid start.
Yeah. I mean, it's a solid start. It's a relationship business, right? Construction, any of it really is a relationship business. And so you guys started off with a relationship together and then decided, you know, Asaf, you were going to go off on your own with John and kind of continue to do this. What were some of the things you saw early on in the company, you know, where you were, the concrete contractor, but then that you've seen consistently, specifically in construction? Because I know our listeners, we've got a lot of folks, John, you nailed it, right? They worked for a large contractor of some sort, just wanted to do it their own way and went and did it their own way or had an idea. So Asaf, what are some of the early signs or early things that you see can be a problem that maybe that entrepreneurial spirit might get through it for a year, but it's probably not going to get them much further than that?
Something I've learned in my previous career when I was a student, I was in hospitality, and I had the pleasure to work with one of the best chefs in Israel, and we were doing catering, we were serving the top 1%, and you know, I was in charge of the front. I was the manager of the catering, and he was in charge of the back kitchen. And he told me before one of our most important events, and we were serving to generals and prime ministers, and you know, where politics and wealth meet and make deals, right? This is where we were serving them food. And he said, "Everyone can make good food. Service is what they remember you for." So going back, fast forward to construction, a lot of the things are not difficult. There's a lot of people can go and do good work, you know, and that checks all the boxes and it's decent and will last. It's everything else involved in it. That's where you can go wrong. So, you know, someone goes out of their own, start their own business, friends and family, they know them. They're not going to have any issues. Even if they're a little edgy, rough around the edges, they'll do good work. They're probably talented. You know, I've seen that many times. It's when they start going to outside of their network, it's where they start to see issues. And typically it's, you know, hitting that $800,000 to $1.5 million a year. It's when you start to be a real business. You know, up until that point, you're kind of chucking a truck, right? And when you start to be a real business, and if you think that your own ways without learning, without listening to advice, a professional advice, people with experience, that's the ego of an entrepreneur. They don't let them. And that's the failing point, that it's hard for them to go up. Now, construction is a very, you know, it's a cash heavy business. So you get cash flow. As long as you get cash flow, you're kind of okay. You're getting by. The second something goes wrong, everything will, it's like a house of cards. Everything will collapse at once. One thing that went wrong in your plan, and spoiler alert, it will go wrong multiple times, right? The second the first thing goes wrong, it will collapse if you're not properly structured as a business, right? If you just have the solopreneur mindset that I know it all my way or the highway, you know, if you know, I choose the customers, they don't choose me, it only gets you so far. And that's where we mentioned earlier is that's where, you know, building brand, this is where I'm so grateful that we met John early on, and he was so adamant about build your brand and the brand messaging and your reputation. And that what turned us to be probably one of the most known residential concrete contractors, from a company that did no residential concrete work to a company that gets, when I left in 2019, we got 4,500 leads that year, from a company that 7 years earlier got zero, you know, friends and family. So we would not be able to do it without a strong brand strategy and building brand reputation. So to listen to advice, listen to people that have done it, even if it doesn't seem in line with your beliefs when you took off on your own, because you'll need that advice later on. It's easy up until $1 million a year. Break that ceiling. It's probably one of the hardest ceilings to break.
So breaking that ceiling, what are some of the things you've seen? What are some of the indicators of the cracks? So look, let's be honest. Like, I know a lot of entrepreneurs, solopreneurs that have struggled with that part. And in fact, last week's episode, we had someone on who said, you know, one of the biggest things the founders need to do is really know themselves, know their own issues. What are some of the signs, maybe? Are they cash flow signs? Are they, you know, what are the signs that, hey, maybe I can't go at it alone, or maybe I do have a few cracks in the armor I didn't think I had?
Well, it's probably a lot of little ones and possibly a few big ones, right? Taking a little bit longer to send estimates out, right? You go with a client early on, you leave the client house at 12:05, 12:07, they already have an estimate in the inbox. Mm-hmm. When it takes you a few days to get to them and send them those estimates, you know, that's a little crack, right? It's a signal that we may need some help there. Now, one could say, well, it's still within reasonable. Yes, of course, right? But at what point it's not? It's an alert. It's a, okay, remember this. I used to send them out in minutes. Now it takes me days. What's next, right? Weeks? Mm-hmm. Forgetting to send them out, building bad reputation around that, right? That's one. Getting complaints from customers or prospects about quality of product, quality of service, right? Communication issues. You know, we get emails that, hey, I left you 3 voicemails, I haven't heard back, right? Things like that. That's a major crack, and it's different than the first one. Those could easily translate into bad online reputation. You know, as long as Google is around, that one-star review will always going to stay there. And if Google is not around, we're probably going to have bigger problems in the world than my one-star review, right?
So,
you know, being ahead of it before that turns into bad reputation. Early on, you know, the IRS is your partner. It gives you some tax breaks. When you buy new equipment, you get full write-offs on it, right? And so you can make a little bit of money in the year with no tax. You're keeping all of it for yourself. That's, you don't have to make a lot of money when you're deferring your tax and enjoy a better lifestyle than you had before. Let's say you were a successful W-2 employee in a construction company making $130,000 a year. Your net take home is 85, something like that, right? You go on your own with, you buy some equipment, you write it off, you term it on loans, but you take all the depreciation, bonus 179 this year. You're living the high life. You could make 110,000, which is less than your W-2, and your take home is higher, right? You take the entire 110,000 home. You're living the life. This is great. Being an entrepreneur is phenomenal. 2 years later, cars started to break, right? The engine needs to be, this is a construction truck. You put 40,000 miles a year, anything you can think of. We had a fleet of trucks and it was aging and it could be expensive. And so not planning for that rainy day, those things. And it all happens kind of at once. I just heard the other day about a logistic company that, for a couple of years, they're very successful. The owner's living, lavish lifestyle out of Chicago, which is a hub for logistics, first class, brand new home, cars, everything. And their they're now nearly bankrupt at the moment. You know, a little change in logistic business and like that, you know, from Lamborghinis to Uber, right?
So yeah, Uber, if you're lucky, you might be on the old, we call them the Shubaroos here.
Driving Ubers, you know, for extra income.
Yeah, right?
Let me play off something for a second, if you don't mind. So you know, Asaf just kind of described a picture of kind of an early stage company. And he described being really good at what you do, kind of at the center. And then all these other things that go around it, you're pretty good at when there's just, you know, you and a few clients and whatever, a few customers. But then as it grows, things start to kind of, you know, fray at the edges and whatever. And so the thing that I want to point out is now it's sort of like a cell dividing. Now there's two kind of closely related worlds that you need to care about. They're both important and neither can be neglected. One is the experience that the market is having while they're working with your company, right? And it's not just the customer, that's part of the market, but the other vendors, you know, suppliers, you know, people that work with you, everyone together, you know, they have an experience working with you that you've got to manage and maintain. And if you don't, it's going to lead to random things happening, and random things more often than not are not going to work in your favor. So that's one universe, is how is everybody experiencing me? And then the other universe is, am I making smart business decisions so that I have the strength I need to carry this thing forward, right? And the one is really governed by one word called brand, right? Because what is a brand? It's what people think about you and your business. That's what a brand, your brand is what people think and think about you, what they believe about you. That's what a brand is. And it, you know, a lot of smaller businesses, they don't think branding is important. Well, we're too small to worry about branding and whatever. I designed the logo the day I started this business and it's still good enough now. They think their brand is a logo versus, if they really think about it, your reputation, what people think about you, are they even aware of your existence? You know, those things are all kind of part of brand. The other label is business plan. It's the approach to fully leveraging your potential as a business. And both of those things, you know, are now in your reality, and neither, it's like having twins. You can't like feed one baby one day and feed the other baby the next. You have to feed them both every day for them to grow and to thrive. So I kind of wanted to put that framework out there about, you know, your responsibility. And by the way, this isn't just affecting businesses that are just starting out and going through that ceiling into, you know, $1, $2, $3 million. You know, we have clients that are multi-billion dollar organizations or just under $1 billion or several hundred million dollars. And the same kinds of stumbling blocks of the mind can still get in the way to prevent making sound business decisions going forward. So it's kind of an equal opportunity for any size of a business. You know, the contractor that Asaf was a part owner in, you know, before he left and joined Linker, I think they were doing, you know, over $14 million in annual revenue when we left. I know they've grown since then. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to put that picture out there. These two twin babies, you got to feed both of them. One's about branding, one's about business planning, and everything has got to be nurtured every day.
And that's a lot of work, especially for somebody who either came out and started their own, or you said this, you hit ceilings along the way. And there are, especially given, depending on what type of contractor you are, you know, you might be a residential contractor that eventually moves up, trade partner into, you know, more commercial work, especially, you know, markets change. Asaf, you said it, and I was on a Construction Dorks podcast recently where we had a large mechanical contractor. And originally, when they were founded in 1997, they did one type of work. And the owner said, this is dangerous. Because if that, I think it was semiconductor work, and if that semiconductor work ever goes away, we're all done. So yes, we got to be happy we have this, but we got to grow. So you're going to hit those ceilings everywhere. I want to pull at the thread, John, on branding, because I think there is a big misunderstanding in both construction in the trades and in the technology market that brand is just something you put out there. It's a logo. It's a statement. It's a vision on the wall. It's something like that. And you're kind of saying it's a lot more than that.
Yeah. I mean, branding starts when we're in grade school, right? You're in first grade out on the playground and they're picking teams for, you know, playing softball. And, you know, the two captains are picked and then they're going to pick, okay, I want this guy because I know he's a really, you know, he can pitch the ball really well. Or this person's really a great batter, or this person's really fast, right? So you already are starting to get a brand reputation as a fast runner, a great pitcher, you know, somebody who really hustles or somebody's really tough, right? And so in the marketplace, you know, one of the first questions that we ask people is, you know, what is it? Why should people pay attention to you? Why should they give you the time of day or be interested in looking at you and you know, giving you a chance? What is it that you're going to do? And we do really great quality, you know, we're really talented and, you know, you're going to get a great price from us and we really stand behind our work and, you know, we're going to be there for you in the long run. But everybody can say that, you know, everybody says those same things, you know, quality, service, price, you know, whatever. You know, that's just rhetoric. Those are just blah, blah, blah points. The people that are going to want to work with you are going to do it because they know something like, wow, I saw this specialty work that they did. And man, I've never seen work like that. Those guys really do have some specialty knowledge. That's part of your brand. Now you're the brand of those guys do that extra special work that other people may not have the knowledge, the experience, or just the problem solving to do a good job. Or, you know, you have a brand. Yeah, that's the brand where we gave them that chance and they really botched that thing up. They said they could do it, but yeah, they, you know, they weren't able to. So I guess the point that I'll make and kind of end on here is branding is the most important thing that you have in terms of your interface with the world, because the brand is the thing. It's like the screen they perceive you through. Right, like your laptop screen, it's what they filter all the things that are true about you. It's what they filter into small little bite-sized chunks that they can remember about why they should be connected with you or not. Right, so reputation, likability, quality, great, you know, how organized you are, doing what you say you do, you're going to do on time. All those things are part of brand, and yes, we all care about our reputation as individuals, and there's nobody who's going to go into the trades who's going to say, well, I don't care what people think of me, but they don't take that next logical leap and say, okay, as a business, they don't know who we are. They know who I am. When it's, you know, me, you know, chucking the truck, like Asaf said, that's one thing. But now there's more people, there's more points of interaction. And what is it that they're getting about me in this business at that level? That has to be thought through. Choices need to be made.
Yeah, it's very different, the experience they have with you one-on-one and even in sometimes the quality of your work. But Asaf, you hit on it before, like if my bill's late, it's not accurate, my estimate or you know, when you say you're going to start my schedule for my job's not right. Those are all things that impact the brand that I think goes beyond just a tagline and a thing you're going to say. So, you know, as John's talking about growing that brand and growing that pieces, what are some of the other building blocks that maybe, you know, each level of growth you can think about that if you walked into the room, you would, you know, help folks with kind of, hey, I'm this construction company. I'm here. I'm $150 million I think I'm great, but I'm also starting to see signs that I'm not. What am I doing? What are you guys doing? What are you asking?
So looking at, you know, $150 million company, it's obviously a well-established company at that point. at that point, probably interview some executives, hearing from them isolated, you know, so they talk more freely. What are their thoughts? And then dive into financial statements. You know, I'm a trained accountant. Financial statements tells a great story from a business standpoint. If you know how to read them properly and you know how they could be used maliciously, right?
Wait. You don't just ask me what my backlog is? That's not how we do this. I just tell you my backlog, you be impressed, and we move forward, right? That's how this works.
That's how people, it's funny because it's so true that people say, oh, I got all this work booked. Okay, but you're losing money. What is it? I can have no work.
I'm diving. I'm moving, by the way. Don't stop because you got
to
move a little bit.
I have to say that.
They'll get you right there in the neck.
I could be sitting at home doing no work, and at least I'm not going to lose money. I will break even. So going to work and to lose money is not a good proposition, but it's sad how many people do that every single day because they don't understand their numbers, because their accountant told them something and they misunderstood what their accountant said because they don't really understand. It's not their specialty. They're craftsmanship, right? They're concrete finishers or carpenters. They're not, I don't know, my accountant, Terry. It's a write-off. It's a depreciation. I don't know. That's why I lost money. Well, is it really? And also the depreciation, how is it going to affect you in the next few years when you're going to run out of it and start pay tax and things will start to break? You still have the loan you're paying for the next 7 years and you wrote it off completely. How is it going to affect you? So a $150 million business, I will dive into, you know, interview executives and look at financial statements. From there, dive into job costings, processes, systems, you know, KPIs for the business goals, brand, and, you know, and not even talking about the whole marketing piece. Once we identify, you know, growth issues, figure out the marketing department, figure out the brand, figure out their the lead cost, customer acquisition cost, customer lifetime value, nurturing of existing clients, repeat business versus new business, and reputation issues that they have that they need to fix, because we've seen that too. And we fixed, you know, in the business that I was involved with, that they had some reputation issues that we fixed. It took us a few years, but we fixed it. Right?
And see, possible. So you're building the foundation and you're already speaking John's language here. So John, you're hearing that. You got Asaf in the background doing that. What are you doing and thinking about? Where does that take you?
Well, a couple of things I'm thinking about. One, first of all, when Asaf was introducing himself, you know, just out of college, came here, whatever, with this family that's really successful in the trades. But, you know, I don't think he gave himself enough credit. I mean, he really had studied small business accounting because he wanted to be an entrepreneur. Some of his colleagues in school went to, you know, some of the big six, you know, accounting firms, but he wanted to go and learn the mechanics of small business growth. It's one of the reasons that I tried to, you know, poach us off. It took me 2 or 3 years to get him to come and join Lenker. Because I knew that we would grow as a firm if we had him. And again, I stepped down as CEO in order for him to come in and be CEO because I am no good as a CEO. So that's, you know, this is kind of taking my own medicine. So in the case of Lenker, you know, what's the title of the episode again? Getting out of your own way. You know, sometimes in my case, I've been around consulting long enough to see, you know, I need to get out of the way of the executive leadership of this business and have somebody who that's what they do, right? So I wanted to say that about Asaf because, I mean, that's why I recruited him to come in and be a partner. And but when you look at that large organization, what goes wrong, right? You have tremendous success. You get up to be a certain size, you know, $250 million, $500 million. And then things start to go wrong. Well, one thing that happens is that the people who got the business there aren't there anymore. The people who knew why we were doing this in the first place, either they, you know, there's been succession planning and maybe the kids took over or, you know, the business has been bought out. And now you've got a bunch of people who their complete mindset is around, you know, this is what we, how we got to perform this quarter. We need to make these cuts, these additions, because I need my numbers to look right for the investors. And they're thinking all about the business. They're thinking all about, you know, yes, it's important to know the numbers, but you can't starve the baby, right? That's never an option. And so a lot of times what it is that we get invited in by someone in the organization who was hired usually, and they see that vision is lacking. Like the people that we need to reinfuse this business with a sense of identity. We need to refresh the brand, not just, you know, put out external graphics and words and, you know, okay, here's our new brand. It never is that. It always starts with who are we and who do we want to be? Where are we and where are we going? And what is it about us that makes us a company that people should care about? And that's the kind of, it's psychological. It's like group therapy. You get invited in, and a lot of times you get invited in and the person gets shot down. Nope, not doing it, not interested, and we don't get the deal. Every once in a while, I had a meeting like that this morning. One of the most successful businesses in their space, over $100 million in revenue, and they picked us to come and bring them to the next generation and to the next version of what the market perceives them as being. And that was a situation where everything lined up. Every person inside cared more about the impact the organization is going to have on the world than they cared about their own position, how much they were going to make that quarter, or what other people thought of them. They were like several people in that call were willing to make personal sacrifices for the better good. Every once in a while that happens. And I'm telling you, when you take a company that has a foundation and a legacy and a history that has done something remarkable, but it's been a while, it's kind of maybe leveling off or maybe stagnating a little bit, or maybe people are getting confused in the marketplace about why we want to, you know, utilize that organization, or internally people are having an identity crisis. Man, if you can get people lined up around, let's do what's best for all stakeholders, there is so much potential. And that is what Linker does. We seek out situations where everybody is wanting to create an impact. You know, our slogan is, we want you to become the undeniable solution in the market and the brand your audiences know, trust, and love. And those, every one of those words is chosen very deliberately. And that is exactly our mission. We want, you know, and by the way, you can't do it when, you know, everything is junk. You can't do it if the product is crap, or what you're delivering is crap, and the reputation is crap, and the people's values internally are crap. You just can't do it. We wouldn't do it. You couldn't give us enough money to make up false stories to try to promote some crappy company. We would just never do it. We'd all rather die, literally. And because you when we go into an account, we give so much of ourselves from internally that it would become toxic. You're taking, you know, you're breathing in the same room, you're breathing in and out, you're taking in one another's energy and essence. And so, you know, to me, you if you're listening to this program and, you know, maybe you're starting out and you're wanting to make the smartest decisions. We have one client that is in the tree services business. And they went from, you know, under their first million to several million within a couple of years because of really great talent, some key differentiators that made them a little unique. That the guy who started it had an engineering background. So we really played that up. There's a lot of advantages to working with an engineer, especially big, you know, municipalities and big, you know, large land projects. You need somebody who can read plans. When you take someone who's willing to listen and be smart and look at the business plan and look at the growth plan and look at the branding and really care about it, they can go north really fast. And if you take that same mentality of a person in a department of a larger organization who's willing to spearhead and take the risks and kind of shed the blood to revitalize maybe it's a family business that's kind of stagnated or something else. There is so much potential. There's so much that's possible. And that's what we're seeking. We're seeking people that are ready for that transformation. That's the reason the butterfly is our symbol, because it's all about, it's not just about transforming, but I love the picture of a butterfly emerging from a cocoon. Its wings slowly unfold. Its wings slowly fill with blood, and it becomes ready to take flight. And in creating that process of transformation and the incubation period, and then letting it kind of emerge and take flight, that's what we're here to do.
And I want to peel that apart a little bit, because I know folks listening are like, okay, well, I want to grow my brand. I want to do that. I'm going to just, you know, take out some ads in my local newspaper. I'll hire somebody. Maybe they update a few things for me. You're talking about going beyond that. You're actually looking at focusing on, and Asaf, you hit this earlier, on systems themselves, right? Like, you got to have back-end systems that run your accounting, run your fleets, and you've now got to modernize what you're doing in marketing too, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe it would help to kind of give a little framework of brand, right? This is something that I think is proven to be useful with people who've heard it. When you know that a brand is the interface through which people form their idea of who you are and why they want to choose you or believe in you, you have to think about it this way. Usually when people first encounter you, they're either going to see your symbol, you know, your logo, or they're going to hear your company name, right? And so when they see that symbol or they hear that name, it should communicate something about why you're differentiated. There should be something there. Now, in the case of us, Lenker, it's like, well, that's your last name. We wouldn't have kept it, though. It's a German word, and it means something very specific. The masculine form, it means handlebars or steering wheel, and we create marketing plans that help you steer your business. So it means something. The feminine form means pilot, driver, or guide, and we don't just give you a plan and say, see ya, good luck with it. We are on an expedition with you. We're out there blazing the trail. We got the machetes in our hands. We're cutting down the vegetation. When we work with you in a plan, we are also knowing that we're going to have to live with that too as we go forward. It's got to succeed, right? So that's what our name communicates, the butterfly, the transformation. But the next piece of information is a lot of times a tagline, right? Or a slogan. And I already gave you ours. You know, we want to help you become the undeniable solution in the market. And the brand your audience is know, trust, and love. That gives you the next level of differentiation, right? Being undeniable means when people learn the truth about you, they'd be like, you know, of course I'm going to go with them. I'd be stupid not to go with them. It's undeniable, right? So your logo, your name should communicate something. The tagline or the slogan is the next level of the value proposition. And then if you have a little summary of your value proposition that you write, it could be a sentence or two, that should give the next level. And then the next level under that are your key differentiators. What are the things that set you apart? Our tree trimming guy, they had the engineering background, right? And great banking relationships, by the way, so they could get tools and things that nobody else had. What is it for you? And then there's a bunch of other stuff that everybody can say, right? And once you get the logo, the name, the tagline or the slogan, the value proposition, the key differentiators, then there's just a bunch of technical stuff about what you do. That stuff's got to be clean, crisp, easy to understand, not a head scratcher. You shouldn't have to give them pages and pages to try to understand. It should all be really tightly written copy. That's kind of the architecture around a brand. And it's all designed to communicate your value proposition and why they should choose you versus someone else. So that's the architecture.
I love the architecture portion. So now I want to build on it, because Asaf, you're the business builder on that side. So, you know, John and the team, and together, obviously, you know, from talking to you earlier, you can hear that you've cross-pollinated one another quite a bit. what do you do, you know, as part of this? Now, you know, you kind of laid through that, but as you break through that glass ceiling, there's new things coming. What are the things you're helping them do? What are some of the things you can tell listeners that they should be looking out for or possibly, you know, learning along the way?
Every ceiling will be new challenges, right? Every type of ceiling will be new challenges. It's hard to predict, you know, what will happen between $1 to $10 million, right? You're going to hit a series of different challenges. Staffing will be a big issue early on. And one issue will be hiring. Another issue will be funding it, because payroll is really expensive, especially when you start stacking, you know, if you're a solopreneur starting to be an entrepreneur, hiring some back office people, that now you're paying people things that you before got for free, right? You stayed later, you did accounting, now you got to pay someone $40, $50, $60, $70, $80,000 a year. Yeah, you name it. Depends to what extent the person is entry level or not. Receptionist, you took the calls, now you're paying somebody, you know, with employer costs, $40, $50,000 a year. And those things add up like this, and they're really expensive. So funding it, hiring, one issue. Funding it, second issue. And then you're going to make mistakes. You're going to hire the wrong people. They're going to cost you money, and then you're going to find out about it. They're going to cost you more money. And then they're going to argue with you. They're going to fight with you. Maybe, maybe not, but they still cost you money. Now you got to hire. So they created a whole bunch of issues for you. So that's early on, that set of issues. Later on, you'll have set of issues about scalability, right? How do you automate certain processes? You know, you used to do, you know, one job a week, then you move to, you know, a couple jobs a week, maybe then you move to one job a day. You know, when I left, and again, it's a $14.5 million business when I left, we used to be in sometimes 14 different locations in one day. So just from logistics standpoint, to comprehend, how do you manage 14 different locations? Before, it was a back pocket, right? You got your phone and you manage everything from your iPhone. You're in 14 different locations. You have 120 field guys on your payroll every single day, tracking time to a job that affect job costing, you know, 14 Menards cards and 14 American Expresses out there purchasing, you know, thousands of dollars a day. How do you track that? So scale between this to that. And we're only talking about a $15 million business, $20 million business. As you grow up to a $100 million business, you know, those issues, you know, become, you know, larger and larger and larger. So just understanding. So where we come and the values that we bring in is wherever the timestamp that we join, trying to understand the status quo. Where are things at today? Not necessarily where it should be. Not where have you been a year ago. What's the stoic mind of today? Where are you at right now? What's working? What's not working? We're able to identify a lot more than just marketing, because we can look throughout the entire business and we can help you put a plan, and it's driven from a performa typically. And a performa will have the drivers built in, and we break down to strategies, you know, 3-5 year strategies, and then, you know, 12 months tactical plans. Some things we can help, some things we can't, but we can help you identify what are those elements, and you need to. We can help from a consulting standpoint, but not from from our services standpoint, right? But really build a plan, understanding where you're at, the current challenge. Make sure you know what the real challenge is. I'll give you an example. We still have a client, and it's a small builder, and starting up, pretty cool brand. Good traction right at the get-go. And when it came to scale his marketing to support the growth, he's like, hey, I can't scale. I'm not making any money. And my first reaction is, being a blunt Israeli, is you're getting the leads, you're getting the work. If you cannot afford us, it's because you have a problem somewhere else. Let us help. You know, get us in. Let us help. Let me see, because you probably have an issue in bidding. And then as I said that, he said, yeah, there's some jobs that went sideways and we'll make money on. So in my mind, it's like, you don't have a marketing problem, my friend. You've got either an estimating problem or an execution problem. But even that alone, I don't know still what it is. You maybe have perfect execution, but your estimating is weak. Or you may have great estimating and your execution is weak, right? And it could be that both are weak. definitely not both are strong, right? but diving in, it's in my head is very simple. You know, business is a set of gears and they all work together. In fact, I got a set of gears on my fridge that my three-year-old is playing with, and now my six-month-old is playing with. And you see one turning so many other ones, right? And a business is like that. You're constantly adding new gears, and as you expand, they have to work in harmony, right? They can't turn against themselves. They have to turn together, right? And in the same speed. You know, some are bigger, some are smaller. Speed may be deceiving, but essentially they're turning in the same speed, right? Depends where you measure, in the center or on the outside. I'm not going to go into mathematics right now.
But no, we'll lose everybody if we do that one.
Yeah, if we haven't already because of me going on a speech here. But yeah, is really understanding which one of those gears is not functioning, which one is working against you, which ones are working great, and then have a plan that is looking forward enough through multiple ceilings that your plan is to smoothly go through them. And yes, the business will do this. It's very natural. There's nothing, everything that goes like that will go drop, right? So, you know, it's controlled growth. You have nice run and you have a little, you know, little breather. Okay, let's take a deep breath. It was a quick run. We had some issues. This is fixing. And now we're ready for another run. Even the stock market behave like this, right? It takes a run and it takes a step back. Gets you reorganized, layoffs, recession, mini recession, whatever you want to call it, bubble, and then ready for another run. Same as you grow. You're going to have a run. It's going to be successful. You're going to get to the limit of your systems and it's going to start hurting you. You're going to have a drop. And then that drop is reorganizing, identifying it, seeing it early enough, and then rebuilding for another run. Those are essentially the ceilings, right?
Yeah.
Those are the ceilings.
Those are the ceilings you hit. And John, I think we talked about this earlier, right? Far too many construction companies in particular are chasing that last loss. And we see that consistently. Instead of just seeing it as Asaf's talking about as a set of gears, that you're just adding new gears to it and they need to turn. And I think we're constantly seeing that chasing. And, you know, before we had you guys on, that's what we talked about, is that we can't do that. How do you guide some folks? I mean, because Asaf can show you, and you said it yourself, you got that little blunt Israeli to you. John seems like the softer one who might be like, okay, this is how we're going to address this and look at this. What are some of the final pieces there as we wrap it up that you help them to not just chase that next downturn or chase that next loss?
Well, I think Asaf and I take turns playing the bad cop role in different contexts. You know, I want to say one thing about the gear analogy. You know, I think there are three kinds of gears in the mechanism, three categories. One is a gear that's working well. One is a gear that's not working well, and you know it. And one is a gear that's not working well and you're lying to yourself about it. And at any given moment in your journey through, you know, running a business, there is always, no matter what situation you're in, there's always the smartest thing you could do in that moment. There's always the smartest thing. And the likelihood that a person on their own, just from a statistical standpoint, is going to have the self-awareness and the breadth of knowledge 360 degrees to make those smartest decisions, it's very rare that a person will have that. And one of the most important things is, you know, identifying what is the smartest thing you should be doing right now, and what is the lie that you're holding on to, you're not willing to let go of for whatever reason, whether it's ego, whether it's you know, some other reason. So I just wanted to kind of put my two cents in on the gear analogy. And I would say that where I play bad cop is a lot of times when we're engaging with new potential clients. And one of the first things I ask, there's nothing touchy or feely about it. I say, I'm going to ask you these three questions. Why this? Why now? And why you? Right? Why this? Why now? You're wanting to do this and grow this thing, whatever it is. Why is this the thing you should be doing and investing your resources in? Why is now the right time to get in to the game? Because a lot of times people come in at the wrong time, either too early or too late. And why are you the one to exploit this market opportunity? Why are you the one to do it? And if they don't have good answers to those three questions, there needs to be a conversation about whether, are you ready? Are you prepared to do what's necessary to put things into that smartest form they can be right now? And one of the things that, you know, you say, well, gosh, guys, how could you possibly work with a company that's doing hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars? And we are, right down to people who are just starting out. How does it even make any sense? Well, the reason is because in every scenario, there is a set of things that you should be doing that, you know, we can quickly assess. And when we come up with a marketing plan or a game plan for your business, a business plan, a strategic plan, it's going to be based on what you actually have to work with, not some theoretical, well, if you had $1 million, you could do this or that. It's going to be based on, here's what you actually have. And from my side of it, it's going to be, here's this thing that is going to make the biggest impact on how the market perceives you right now. And on a soft side, he's going to see, here are the biggest things that you can do that are going to take the risk to de-risk this as much as possible, so that anything that's going to prevent you from succeeding, as much of it as possible, is going to go away. And both of those things together need to work in harmony. Again, feeding the two babies, the two twins, so that they work, they grow up together. One of the things that's so sad is so many people put everything they have on the line to try their vision and their idea. And I tell you, you know, the truth, I've had several conversations with this, that initial meeting, where at the end I said, my friend, I'm just going to tell you right now, free advice, don't do what you're planning to do. Don't spend your life savings on this idea. You're not ready for this. You don't have enough experience. Your network isn't big enough. Nobody knows you as having, you don't have a reputation to even start with something. That's the hardest thing you can do. But, you know, in most situations, and ideally, you meet somebody who's got a lot of really great things going on. They just need a break. And the break they need is they need to break away from the things that are holding them back. Yep. And that's where we come in. We're going to help them break away from the things that are holding them back. And we're going to kind of graft in the things that are going to, you know, move them forward very quickly.
Well, and that's a great way to wrap it up, because I think the folks listening are, especially my solopreneurs, my entrepreneurs, those folks that are growing it, you hit on two major things. Look, you want to grow your business, but man, is it risky, and de-risking it at the same time is a nice balance. We talk about that when it comes to construction projects. We talk about it when it comes to construction businesses, and that is a key. So before I let everybody go, if you are listening in and you want to catch up with what Lenker and the team is doing, just check out lenker.com/CTC, and they've got a little special stuff out there for you guys, and check them out. Think about the things that they said. They're not the only ones in this world. There's lots of people out there, and they're really guiding you down the world. I'm sure they'd tell you they can't bite off everything out in the world. So I appreciated both of you two joining us. Asaf, thanks so much for taking the time to sit down and have a little chat with me today.
Appreciate that, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. John, thanks for hitting me up and starting the conversations and then being willing to come on and talk for a little bit on the show.
Thank you, Jeff. It was a pleasure.
It's definitely our pleasure. Everybody, thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with John Lenker and Asaf Ari. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, subscribe to our emailer, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.